Hey everybody, this is Mike, and you're listening to a very special episode of the Monero Monitor podcast. Today I'm doing something a bit different than my past shows. I've traveled from Boulder, Colorado to the downtown Denver offices of a brand new crypto startup called Salt Lending. I'm joined today by Salt CEO, Sean Owen, and Salt Creative and Community Director, Caleb Slade, who've agreed to tell us about their company. Sean and Caleb, why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
Yeah, hello. Thanks for coming over.
Hi, guys.
My name is Sean Owen, as stated, and CEO of Salt Lending. We also go by just Salt, which stands for Secured Automated Lending Technology. We're excited to kind of tell you what we do.
And I'm Caleb Slade. I'm the Creative and Community Director. And, yeah, getting some momentum. We're excited to tell everybody where we're headed and where we are and, yeah, getting into it.
All right, cool. So people who have listened to the podcast in the past might be thinking for a second, now this is a little bit different. Obviously, everything up until now, I've tried to focus on companies who are in the Monero space because this is the Monero Monitor. But this podcast, today's episode, just kind of happens to be something that I stumbled into. I was down at the Denver Bitcoin meetup a few months back and ran into Caleb, and we got talking about his company. They were actually sponsoring the event at the time for that month. And we got talking about the company, and I offered to have him on the show so that he could tell everybody about this. So I believe this is the first time that I've seen you guys in any type of media. I tried looking for interviews or anything, but I hadn't found
it. It might be the first.
All right, well, that's pretty cool. I'm glad to kind of break this story. By the time people are actually listening to this, you guys will be presenting at Consensus in New York?
Yep. If you're putting this out after next week, we're going to be in New York all week next week for Consensus 2017 and then also Token Summit.
From May 22nd through the 24th.
Okay. Well, this is coming out May 22nd, so depending on when people download and listen, they may have heard from you there, or this might be their first taste to you.
And if anyone is at Consensus, we'll be having a booth, and so come check us out at Consensus. We'd love to talk to you.
Cool. So, yeah, just any listeners who have been in for a while, pardon me as I go a little bit beyond the Monero space. This was just a cool opportunity I saw. And then any new listeners who are coming in from maybe Bitcoin, welcome to the show. And feel free to go back and look at some of the other episodes we've had. But anyway, why don't we start, Sean, with just telling everybody the basic idea of Salt Lending?
Sure. So there's a lot to what we want to tackle. It's a pretty ambitious plan, and there's a lot we could get excited about and share with you. But I want to just kind of break down the simplest version of the idea and where it started, and then kind of elaborate to where we're at right now and where we want to take it. So the concept is, when you first hear it, almost kind of obvious, and then when it sinks in, it's like, oh, I get it, which would be, if I own something like Bitcoin, it'd be great if you could put that up for collateral like property and take a loan against it. The same way that you would have equity in a home or in a portfolio or a property, a car, you can borrow against any other type of property. Yet you can't borrow against Bitcoin. It's new. And this is also before there was lots of other blockchains. So we've expanded into being able to lend against blockchain or blockchain-backed loans. And this is very analogous to securities-backed lending, where lots of large institutions would have large portfolios of assets, whether it be IBM or Apple, and they want to swap back and forth or use those as value to hold a position. So the concept was kind of simple and didn't exist, and we spent quite a bit of time looking at that and said, this is an amazing kind of piece to the economy that needs to be here. Let's do it. Let's make it happen. From then, we've kind of gone even much further into really focusing on the technology that would connect a borrower or a lender or anybody that would have something that would want to hold as value as a digital asset, specifically distributed ledger technology. So this could be Monero, say, and not want to sell that, but maybe want to spend something else like cash that they need to pay bills. And instead of liquidating their asset or having to sell it out and turn it into cash and then go pay their bill, they'd simply borrow against it so they can still continue to hold on to what they value, see the appreciation, avoid having to worry about accounting for stuff like taxes or other elements that might not be favorable depending on timing. You know, and then from there, we've just been going out down the road of anything that has to do with lending technology and smart contracts, and how can we make this an efficient product that allows for gained ability. I don't like to use the term peer-to-peer, but in a lot of ways there's a version of this that's peer-to-peer. And you can take that into the future where maybe it's one asset that's on a blockchain held against another asset on a blockchain. One's just somebody wants to spend more than the other, and the other person wants to a return on investment in the type of currency they'd be lending, right? So that, in a kind of a quick summary, is secured automated lending technology in SALT, what we're looking to do. And then from there, I kind of let you peel it apart and see which parts of it you want to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'm curious about the kind of implementation of it, and then some of the other things. I think, Caleb, you and I had talked about how you guys were going to have sort of a membership model. Let's first start off with just let's talk about what it takes in order to get some type of Bitcoin lending going. So you obviously need people who want to borrow against their Bitcoin, and then you need people who want to provide the money that people can borrow, so the lenders. And how are you approaching that problem? Are you being the lenders, or are you bringing in outside people? How's that work?
Yeah, it's there's a lot that goes into it. And you've touched on kind of the two big pieces of creating the market. It really requires the demand to be there, which we know is there. There's lots of people waiting to use the service from the borrower side. And on the other side of that, people that want to get into this in an indirect way, maybe, that are familiar with investing their cash, or that's the business they're in lending, that have the ability to underwrite the loans and or the securities, depending on which version you're talking about. And they just don't have a way to connect. There's no mechanism. There's a gap in between these two. They just doesn't exist. So we're filling that, and there's a lot that goes into that. The making the market, the marketing of the product, the technology leads. Everything is tech-driven. So you've got to be really at the cutting edge of using the technology. The regulation, understanding what it requires to be able to properly let somebody with dollars come and lend. When you're dealing with the legacy system as it is, there's an entire framework that's already been put in place, whether you're a bank, credit union, broker-dealer, hedge fund, private equity firm. So there's lots of rules that they have to kind of follow in the way that they see it and the way that they understand how they'd be investing on the cash side. And then on the other side, you've got kind of the other side of the world, which is people who understand blockchain security, multi-signature addresses, privacy, holding onto your assets, being able to trade in and out of positions, you know, work through wallets. These are terms that maybe lenders don't have any clue about, but borrowers totally get. So we really kind of do a lot. It's all tech-driven, but there's a lot of relationship building and process and workflow in order to make that all come together.
From a lender's perspective, it's really, if you understand what a blockchain asset is, you understand that it is the perfect form of collateral because of how easy and efficient and cheap it is to transfer and store and liquidate if you need to protect your loan. Lenders looking at lending against this model, they're used to lending against assets that aren't that easy to transfer, aren't that easy to divide, aren't that easy to use to protect a loan that maybe defaults. And because of that, lenders have to spend a tremendous amount of energy and cost evaluating the borrower's creditworthiness and deciding how likely that person is to pay back, regardless of the value of the asset underlying the loan. So what we're proving with this model is that if the asset that's protecting the loan is ideal, then you don't even have to worry about the creditworthiness of the borrower, which is exactly what our system or our lending platform does, is we only focus on the value of the asset underlying the loan, and your credit doesn't really come into play. And for a lender, if they're used to, let's say, lending against mortgages or real estate, if a borrower becomes insolvent for a month or something like that, they have to default on the whole loan. They have to foreclose on the whole property. The parallel in Bitcoin is like if you could go in to a house or a mortgage that goes upside down, and you could shave off the living room, and then the loan would be fine, because if they could perfect possession of that living room, right, to make the loan right side up again. And that's what cryptocurrencies and blockchain assets do, is because they're so infinitely divisible and they're so cheap and easy to store securely and then sell on the market if they need to. It really makes each loan more efficient, and we can offer better rates to the borrowers and better rates to the lenders.
Yeah, that seems to make sense. I'm guessing you're using some type of multi-signature where you're maybe the third party involved? I'm guessing there's, you know, a lender, a borrower, and then you as that third party decider. How's that work?
Yeah, and I won't be able to give you all of the information because I don't want to get myself into like too much of what we're doing specifically. But you've got the concept right. So if you take, for example, 3 or 4 signatures, that's already pretty secure. For anybody to have to log in or use 3 different devices in order to move a transaction, that's a pretty sophisticated model for security. But then you can add secondary passwords on top of that, and then you can distribute those onto hardware that's in separate locations or has protocol in place. You know, it could be different companies. So we use third-party providers to help us separate the fact that nobody can come and say, well, Salt could just run off with your money. And in fact, that's really important for us to allow for a borrower specifically to really feel like they still have control. If I do everything that I'm supposed to, this is not something I've put up on an exchange or given over to somebody else. It's not just a digit that represents my ownership in a screen. It's actually my key, and I've got the key on my hardware, right? So there's a way to override that in the contract if needed based on the lender versus the borrower back and forth. But it's all very much focused on how to distribute the risk, how to make it very provably safe, and to never have a situation happen where there's any type of loss, and to give everybody the control and without having to have a custodian, so to speak. So we act as a connection, and we help play a role in that, but we're not the custodian.
Okay. So do you have a third-party bank or lender, or who plays that role? Is it an autonomous thing? I mean,
We play one role through software. Lender plays another role through a third party. You can think of it like, say, for example, if you're familiar with some of the service provided, like BitGo or Coinbase or Zappo. There's lots of people get into that space where they just basically will hold one key or 2 keys, depending on what you need. And then you have business logic based on rules that say, well, we'll only do this if this happens. So that kind of helped paint the picture of how you take 4 signatures, for an example. And the 3 of us all have one, but then there's also somebody else. There's really no opportunity for collusion. And you also have, you know, obfuscation. So we don't publicize who's on the other end of it. You're getting cash, but you don't know who the lender is, and the lender doesn't know who the borrower is, right? So there's really no way to go figure out where are the keys.
Yeah. Our goal, as much as possible, is to remove as much trust as possible from the situation. So the borrower knows that if they pay back the loan, their collateral is returned to them. You know, there's no like impediment to that. And the lender knows on the other side, if the borrower doesn't pay back the loan, then I'm made whole through this collateral. And there's no need to trust anyone really that's going to happen. Well, you know, it's a, you know, relatively trustless situation as much as you can when you're interfacing a very trustless network like blockchain assets and a system that relies heavily on trust, like traditional financial institutions and networks. So we're trying to bridge that gap and remove as much trust as possible from that agreement.
Okay, cool. Let's kind of expand on this a little bit, and let's kind of create a scenario. So say I have 10 Bitcoin that I want to borrow against. I would approach you and go through all of whatever it is to set it up. And then what can I expect in as far as how much I could borrow, what types of terms I would need on how I would have to pay interest and things like that? How long can I keep this as collateral? Can we walk through how that would work?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a really generic, basic example. And then from there, we have plans to kind of create a lot more flexibility and more what we'd call products, different types of products. So, for example, one product would be interest only versus principal and interest. Those are two different types of structures that somebody might have the preference for. But then when you get into the loan markets, there's lots of different ways you can structure loans. So we're starting with a very basic principal, and I'll give you the basic example. And then from there, you know, you can kind of imagine any type of loan you've ever experienced. Those are options that we'll bring in if there's a market for it. But a basic understanding of this would be you have 10 Bitcoin. You know that Salt will help you in a loan. You don't want to sell your Bitcoin. You've seen the appreciation, but you need to spend some cash on something. You need to make a payment of some type. So you go to Salt, and we have you sign up. You become a member. Our membership is denominated in Salt, and it's a Salt membership, and it's on a blockchain. It's on the Ethereum blockchain for the time being. Probably will stay there. And that's a transferable token. So either you either say, I'm going to use this with Salt because I want to get a loan, or I've changed my mind and you could go sell it. I'll hold on to it for later. And that's applicable as an option to use on any one of our products, whether it's buying a custom hardware wallet to go along with your platform, you know, your login, so you have the security, or if you just want to pay down some interest, depending. But now you come to the loan function, you've gone through the process, and you've finished your profile, and you say, I'd like a loan. And we're going to ask you how much, and it's going to have a calculator that'll tell you for that amount, we'll give you a loan for, say, $8,000, because we have to overprotect it in case of volatility for the lender.
$10,000 worth of Bitcoin would be $8,000, but 10 Bitcoin would obviously be...
Oh, yeah, if you said 10 Bitcoin, whatever the math was on that, we'll do an 80% loan to value.
Sure.
So then a contract is created. You go through the process. An address is created for the collateral. You send the funds, that basically memorializes or officializes that this is good, collateral is good, we know the collateral. So you've already got a linked account where you want the funds to go, now we send you the money. Then we send you notifications to make it easy for setting up auto payment and things to make your life easier. But ultimately then now you have to make a monthly payment and pay down either interest or principal and interest depending on the structure of the loan. You pay that down and suddenly now you have extra collateral that has always been yours, it's still yours, and then you decide, I want to take out another loan like a line of credit, or I want to take my Bitcoin off the system again. Then that becomes a preference for you.
Okay. And so then is the amount that you decide to borrow off of that 10 Bitcoin, does that at all determine your interest rate then, or what determines the interest rate?
The interest rate is determined by the marketplace of what lenders need and what borrowers will pay. So in the beginning, we've kind of standardized that. It ultimately, what happens is it's a market dynamic. Most anything in markets that's related to interest is something above whatever prime is in the markets where they can get. Typically, if somebody has the option to refinance or get a better rate, they will. So as soon as you open the flexibility of letting people prepay or sell out of whatever position they're in, then now the market decides. But in the early days, it will just be a standard, easy to understand. This is the going rate. You'll know what it is ahead of time, and you either take it or leave it.
Okay. And now you said that you've seen some demand for this already. What kind of volume, for lack of a better word, would you have to see in this on a monthly basis for your company to be able to sustain itself? Because this seems like something that maybe you can get people who are interested in it, but if you don't have enough people, how do you pay for the overhead and everything else?
Yep. So there's a couple dynamics to think about to answer that. One, when we started this, we were looking at a market cap of Bitcoin that was probably 7 billion, 8 billion, around that. And we did all of our math based off of what would happen if we were only doing a niche market of Bitcoin, which is a very small market, mind you, in the big picture. And we crunched the numbers and did the math. And if you could get leveraged out or loaned under management, assets under management would be a way to think about it. $1 billion, you still have a decent company to make. However, things have gotten much more favorable on the fact that the market cap of all crypto is now more like 60 billion and climbing very quickly. And we've seen this kind of rush, which we've all been anticipating, but now that it's here, I don't believe that that goes away. You know, our bet is that more and more types of value, whether they're native internet new types of value like Bitcoin, Monero, storage, you name it, interesting projects, or if it's more traditional types of value like assets, stock portfolios, bonds,
gold.
Title, gold.
Those
there's lots of work heading towards putting all of those on the blockchain, right? And thus, now your market kind of exponentially gets larger. So we think that it will not only be just Bitcoin being leveraged. We think it's going to be portfolios of blockchain assets that are borrowed against. And we think it's a very big market. So in order for what we need to survive, we would be just fine if we were a little niche company, but we're planning something much bigger.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the active projects right now that are like big name companies like IBM, Samsung, Goldman Sachs, Merrill Lynch, there's huge, some of the biggest companies in the world have active projects to tokenize the world's existing assets, like the Royal Mint of Scotland, the Royal Mint of Canada. They're both have individual projects to tokenize gold in vaults. So they'll have a digital token that corresponds to an ounce of gold in their vault, and they guarantee that. Diamonds, jewelry, art, even small niche industries like appliance servicing, which is a headache of an industry that has a lot of problems that can be solved with blockchain technology. they're starting to look at service contracts on appliances as an asset, and that's being traded, and it's a fungible asset now on the blockchain, on blockchains. And that's really interesting to us because we are building the technology that makes leveraging those assets, the value of those assets, we enable that. And we do it in a way that's very efficient, very affordable, very automated, and very a large reduction in trust in those agreements. We think that our upside is so much bigger than just Bitcoin or any singular crypto asset that exists today. We really want to be agnostic to the usefulness of this technology. We don't want to say it's only good for this or it's only good for that, because we see the power of distributed ledgers doesn't just apply to money. And Bitcoin is kind of like what email is to the internet. You know, it's one powerful application for a really powerful technology, and currency is one really powerful application of a very, very powerful technology, distributed ledgers and blockchains. So we're excited to see the future of value and assets and where that's going. We think it's a tidal wave that's coming. Whether or not you think it's coming, it's going to come for you. So we're positioning ourselves to be the catalyst for the leverage of that value.
Interesting. Okay, so now I imagine you're going to start with Bitcoin is going to be the only collateral you can put up, and then cash is what you can borrow. But how will you evaluate, or what's your plan? I imagine something like Ethereum with its market cap is going to be a quick thing to follow.
Yep.
What about other coins? What is needed for that? And then also, is this something that's going to be strictly for the U.S., so strictly borrowing U.S. dollars, or will this be open to a worldwide market?
Yep, great question. So there's a roadmap. Version one, easy to understand, biggest crypto market cap of blockchain is Bitcoin. Biggest cash, most used cash in the world is dollar. So those are kind of the obvious pair to start with. But then from there, Ethereum is right on the roadmap. There's actually already a lot of demand for people wanting to borrow against their Ethereum. And now you've seen the explosion of a lot of the other caps, right? So by the time we can even get to there, I think there'll be even more. However, what we're going to look at is liquidity. How much of a market is there? What would it look like if we had to sell? How many people need this? What other currencies are the biggest? Is it the euro? Is it the yuan? Right? Where do we go next? And a lot of that is just letting the market inform us. We don't know for sure where the market goes. What's the third or fourth asset, and what's the third or fourth currency? What we know is there's always going to be assets people want to hold on blockchains, and there's always going to be currencies people want to spend that they need to borrow. So that's kind of our roadmap, is let's come up with something very simple and useful, let people use it and see it, and then let the market tell us what is next.
And people talk a lot about, I think what's really exciting is when we start leveraging crypto for crypto to spend, right? People talk a lot about Bitcoin. In 10 years, most consumers might not even touch Bitcoin. They might not even know they're using Bitcoin because it becomes kind of a first layer store of value. And I could definitely see someone leveraging their Bitcoin assets, or somebody leveraging Bitcoin assets for something that's a more instant transaction, like a Dash or a Monero even, for those transactions. And you think, like, that's really the agnostic benefit of something like this, because there are things that you want to hold that have value. There are things that are better to spend, either for the pragmatic structure of what that technology is or that asset is, or just because you see that as a depreciating asset versus something that you think is going to be more valuable tomorrow.
Hey everyone, Mike here. I just wanted to take a quick break to thank everyone for your support of the show so far. In just 4 episodes, we've seen nearly 3,200 downloads, with over 1,400 just this month. If you're enjoying the shows, please help continue to build our base by subscribing on your favorite podcast site and following me on Twitter at Monero Monitor. Leave a comment on iTunes, Google Play, or on our website and give us your feedback. Lastly, I just want to thank the generous donors to the show. Your support has helped with hosting costs and allows me to invest in new equipment to bring you in-person shows like today, and maybe even videos or interviews at conferences in the future. Now let's get back to it.
So we talked a little bit about somebody who wanted to borrow, but on your website it talks also about how you can become a lender. So It says that you have to meet a requirement of being an accredited investor. And can you walk us through, first of all, what that means for people who might be listening that don't know, and then second, how you go about assessing somebody's status as an accredited investor?
Sure. So the term accredited investor is a benchmark. It's a way for the SEC to say you need to do disclosure and due diligence to make sure that you're not out there selling something to Grandma Kettle that she shouldn't be buying so you can make a profit. It's a kind of a rule that's been around for a very long time. I think it probably could be done differently in the future, better, but for whatever it's worth, it's a standard that says if I wanted to go sell investment in the company Salt, I would need to come up with an offering. I would have to fully disclose that you can lose your money, and I'd have to make you put a minimum up, and I'd have to vet that you have a certain net worth to qualify for being an accredited investor. And then if you have a certain net worth and you fully signed off on saying, I understand all this, now I can sell you equity. So it's a bit of a barrier for most people, and it's not necessarily our long-term vision to make it that way. It's just simply one type of offering. So if you are issuing a security in that manner, that's required under those rules. That's very different than if a bank wants to underwrite notes or loans, and it's very different if a hedge fund wants to go out and do specific types of structured notes, etc. So the way we disclose that and the way it works is if somebody wants to use our platform, as we have people that want to from the lending side of it, there's a couple different ways they can do that. And it's different in every jurisdiction. So this would be a different conversation if we're in the Eurozone or in Hong Kong, right? But there's rules typically set by governments because you're dealing in a national currency that's issued by the government. So you have to play by those rules when dealing with that currency. So if you want to be an investor, which is another term for a lender, then we're going to have to go through suitability and make sure that you are understanding what it is you're doing and or you're set up for that. And then we make it as easy as possible, whether you want a licensing agreement, or kind of a easy, here, just write a check and we put it into a fund and now it's been invested, or if we allow people to be the underwriter or participate on the platform in a peer-to-peer fashion, which is more analogous to, say, like a lending club. So there's a lot of different ways in such a big market. When you talk about just being a lender, that can mean a lot of different things depending on how you structure it. So we want to be as versatile as we can, and we also want to make this available to as many different types of lenders as possible, and then let the market decide, you know, really which direction we go.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yeah, I think so. So as part of that accreditation process, if you're a U.S. lender, for instance, can you self-accredit, or do you have to submit certain documents to your company, to Salt, and then you go from there?
You can self-accredit. There's a due diligence period that is on us to make sure that we're following the law. And again, this isn't us being the primary, right? So we don't want to become a lender. We want to help people connect that are already lenders. So if you're already a lender, this is something that you're very familiar with because you already understand, am I issuing securities? Am I buying securities? What part of the process am I in? What we want to be able to do is eventually extend that down to everybody, right? So anybody could go sign up and pretty much as easily as you would if you opened up a TD Ameritrade or some kind of trading account, have access to be able to put a smaller amount of money in. There's just a lot required to get there. So it's a little further down on the roadmap. It's not our V1. It's not what we're going after day one. It's easier for us to go bring on people who are in the business of lending and say, sure, I can go do X amount of dollars day one, and kind of open up that ability to use the Salt technology without it directly interacting. But then we have plans to get that to where anybody could go on and use it.
Okay. All right. So then, Caleb, we were talking about a few months back that part of this whole thing, and actually, Sean, I think you alluded to it too, is that you have to buy a membership in order to, I assume, be a borrower or also be a lender. How does that work? Can we talk more about the membership?
Yeah, so we think the membership is really cool. It's another application of using blockchain technology in an actual real-world environment. I think most people listening, and I could be wrong, but they probably have a good sense of crypto if they're listening to this, and or if you're new, they understand kind of the value add of being able to denominate things on tokens or in smart contracts. And there's a lot of really cool projects that are doing things where it's kind of, if you have this token, you can use this platform, right? Ethereum is probably the most well-known first one. But there's a lot of different ways you can do that. And the way we're doing it is, if you have a membership, which is very normal for a platform, if you're going to be doing a loan, say, for example, you're going to end up paying a lot of interest, right? That's a part of the cost to borrow money. And we're taking that and saying, rather than us creating origination fees and ongoing fees and maybe paperwork fees and all the other things that would normally go into a loan, because we can streamline this, we're going to make it a little simpler, and we're going to do something that fits into using crypto. So we're denominating a membership as a base unit. Say it's worth $10, and you can apply that towards your loan, or you can apply that towards upgrading to have larger credit limits, or you can apply that towards a hardware wallet that would help you provide to secure your side of the coins or the assets. Then you have kind of all the additional benefits of something being transferable, being auditable, being built on a smart contract where you can add additional code into the future. You know, a lot of what we want to do is be able to eventually issue these loans onto the blockchain, right? So they're not just paperwork and they're not just something in code, that they actually exist on the blockchain. That's a pretty big goal. And that's kind of goes down the road of what we want, what we think everything will do, which is being able to transfer value effortlessly on the internet of anything that's of value. Well, these notes are going to be of value. The membership's of value. A gift card is of value, right? There's a lot of different ways you can denominate value. So we've created an application, basically, that says there's a cost to doing this. There's a cost for us to run this, right? There's all of the cost that goes into the technology, the compliance, the software development, the ongoing burden of creating relationships and servicing this, the notification, paying for the software. All of that is a cost, and for us to make money, we have to make money or we can't provide this. And so if you're going to charge, there's a lot of different ways you can charge. You can accept all types of payment, right, which we intend to do, but you can also accept your own internal payment, like most places do. They have coupons, they have credits, they have gift cards, etc. So this is one of many things we want to do that's directly supporting building on the blockchain and or blockchains, and we're pretty excited about it.
So I take it it's a token then, not, I think, on Ethereum.
Yep.
It's an ERC-20
smart contract. What's gained by having that? As opposed, I mean, if the token is only good as a membership for being part of SALT, then why does that need to be on a blockchain?
You don't need to put anything on the blockchain, right? That's just the reality. You don't need to put gold on the blockchain. There's additional benefits.
What's the efficiency then that's gained here?
Mostly transferability and accounting, right? So you have something immutable. If you use an immutable blockchain, there's a lot of value in that automatically, right? Just people underrate, I think, and highly underestimate how much money goes into proving documents exist, whether it's a dollar bill and you have all the fancy material embedded into it, or if it's a notarized document that you have to go put in a safe at your home or a stock certificate. Blockchain solves a lot of that in a very efficient way, right? So just simply that alone, I think, is worth people building more and putting more value onto blockchains in general, the immutable nature. But then there's this efficiency gained in transferability, and that's a really big deal. Being able to transfer value is part of our big value proposition. We believe that in the future, there's much more value that's transferable. So why wouldn't you apply that to something like a membership? Or a token.
It just seems to me that you have, you're with a company like this, you're going to have certain KYC AML requirements.
Yep.
And so let's say, I imagine you're doing some type of ICO or something with this token, but let's say, or maybe you're just continuously selling these tokens indefinitely into the future. Let's say I buy a bunch of them and then transfer them to a whole bunch of other people. Well, you did your KYC on me. But what about all these other people who now have a token and ostensibly have a membership to be able to lend? That
membership doesn't give you the right to borrow or lend. There's a big distinguishment between our ecosphere that has to do with data access, information, security. That's one element. All of the regulatory burden in KYC comes in if you're going to do financial transactions like borrowing. So just because you sign up for a membership and then you give it to your buddy, that doesn't mean we're going to give your buddy a loan.
So what does the membership do then?
Well, it's everything I just described, but I'll see if I can do it in a better way. It accounts for who's a member. It gives us a denominated dollar amount that we can then stack up in process that we're already going to be doing. We already have to account for everything. There's a model that we used. Are you familiar with Bloomberg?
Yeah.
A Bloomberg terminal?
Sure.
Okay, so a Bloomberg terminal was access to what effectively now would be called an application, but it was an actual terminal. And it comes with a lot of data. It comes with the ability to understand that market. It comes with basically a membership, right? You have to pay an annual subscription to that. And you could effectively argue that that's the exact same model we chose. We looked at a lot of what's been done in securities-backed lending. It's almost always a tiered approach to how much access you want, right? It's not a free service. These are not free products. This isn't something you can just give away. It's an expensive financial tool. And that model is something we found very attractive. And the fact that you can do a lot with denominating and representing ownership of value on a blockchain, we think it makes perfect sense. And then we want to build on top of that.
Okay.
And it's not just access to the platform that the tokens get you. Like you were saying, we're going to have Salt-branded hardware wallets that you can purchase with the access token, the membership credit. And we're also going to lower your cost of money if you pay for that level of membership. So the interest rates that you're paying on your loans can be reduced through burning these or spending these tokens. So it's not just access.
Okay. You know? So do the tokens have then a fixed amount, like a fixed value against the dollar?
On our site. Yeah, on our site. What okay. You would want to go sell it to your friend for, that's out of my hands, right?
But you're essentially pledging that for your company, this is always going to be worth $5 or whatever it is.
$10, yeah.
$10.
Okay. Yeah. So we're going to collect $10 from you anyway, right?
Okay.
We need to create revenue.
Yeah.
And we found that because we have lots of different products and because there's a lot that goes into those products, we wanted to quantify them down into buckets. So, for example, if you had a basic access level and what that comes with and what it costs us to service that versus a mid-level or an enterprise level where we're working for you to integrate this into your system or licensing or API in it, then there's a lot more that goes into that. It's a different application, if you will. It's a different product suite. So
okay.
We wanted to bucket them first, and then we started realizing that you can denominate everything into categories. This is 5, this is 10, this is 15. I'm making examples up so to try to make it simple. And I also understand that there's always skepticism in this. I've been around. I was originally like a Bitcoin maximalist, right? So like I thought everything was a scam, whether it was Monero or anything else. But I don't hold that view anymore at all. I think there's lots of ways that you can create projects and tokens, if you will, to use a simple term, that have merit. We want to prove that out.
So essentially the token then is almost as much an IOU where you're or like a Starbucks like Gold Star or whatever, like some type of thing that you're saying, or gift card. You're saying we'll always have this value, and if people on the side want to trade it or whatever, feel free. You don't care, but you're kind of saying this is what it's worth to us.
Yeah. So say you had become a member, right, to get comfortable with that term, and now you have access to this product that we've given you. It's a bunch of different products packaged, and you've purchased extra membership, and you decide that you don't need to do your loan anymore. You don't need to pay down interest, and you don't need the services. The beauty of it is that there's a market for you to kind of get out and sell that off to somebody else that might want it. You could sell it at a discount. You could sell it for whatever you want. We don't really care because we know that we've already made the promise that if you have a ticket to the show, we're going to let you come in and watch the show, right? So there's a lot of different ways that you can denominate something that's a subscription or access, whether it's ticket to the show analogy, whether it's access to data like streaming movies, whether it's credits that give you the option to listen to audiobooks, whether it's something that you flash so you can get into the gym, right? Like these are all basically different models that allow for somebody to come into a country club, a gym, a gun range, whatever fits your profile.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different analogies that we could use in a normal business environment that I think all have the potential to kind of follow the road a lot of people have already done, which is saying instead of us having a serial number or a barcode or any other mechanism, we're doing the exact same thing but using a token or a blockchain smart contract, right? So that's our opinion.
Yeah.
right? We're very excited about it. We love supporting and building onto public blockchains. We think we'll probably service a lot of other applications as well, whether they be private or public. If there's value and they have liquidity and they want to trade, we're probably going to end up interfacing with that some way or another if people want to borrow against it. But then there's a lot of additional cool things we think can be built into the technology. If you're a technology company that's focused on building secured automated lending technology, and you understand what smart contracts are and blockchain tokens, you know, we want to leverage every ounce of that and build as much cool stuff as we can.
Okay. So in a sense, you're kind of just handing off a little bit of the accounting there to Ethereum.
True. And, yeah. A little bit of the accounting, which is really interesting, right? So we can track how many have been redeemed, how many have not been redeemed, where they're transferring, what people are doing with them. You know, hopefully our goal, if we live up to it, is to continue to add more value to our site, right? And to make this something where you would clearly want to pay for a subscription, right? If you're going to pay for the money anyway, it's just an easier way to denominate it, you know, and then our goal becomes how much value can we add to our platform.
And given the community that we're trying to serve, it's like I would much rather have a in-app token or a store credit in a stored on a ledger that isn't privately and centrally held by that company. Like, what if they decide they don't want to value that credit that I own, and they can just turn that off, like with a Starbucks card? Not that Starbucks ever would, probably, but
you know, but on the same token, if you guys decided you didn't want to honor the value of it, doesn't matter to me that it's on the blockchain at that point. You know, it just becomes, at that point, your token just becomes any one of the other dead scam coins on the market. Not saying that you are scam coin.
Yeah, it's possible that a company could.
We are, by the way. No,
yeah, no, totally. We're just waiting. We're just waiting for the money to come in. No, but there was no reason we would stop accepting just one token if we weren't stopping accepting all the tokens. Like if we go out of business or something, perhaps, yeah. But I mean, if you have something that is stored on a blockchain that is separate from that company's internal ledger or a centralized ledger, then there's a secondary market. Then the secondary market doesn't ask for Salt's permission to value that. So we're giving up a lot of control of this internal token, but we think it's more efficient. It's more mutable. It's more it's requiring less trust of our customers and the market in general.
I mean, quite bluntly, there's a lot of other benefits for us as well in marketing, in brand acquisition. You know, our goal is let's get as many people as possible to know about Salt, to sign up, give it to them for literally free in the beginning, almost as free as you can get. And then let's learn from the community. Let's interact. Let's participate in a truly, you know, agile way. Let's really kind of listen to the feedback and work with people and build that community and stake our claim and say, we're the ones doing this. So there's a lot of benefit to being able to have something that's transferable where everybody can help you market.
Okay.
Right. And this whole project becomes really very interestingly meta when our platform starts leveraging Salt tokens. You know, so if you have a bunch of Salt tokens, that's an asset with value, and you can leverage that for dollars to spend.
Yeah, if we get to the point where we're able to use that as collateral, I'd be very happy.
Yeah.
Right. So
I mean, that's our goal. Right. Like any blockchain asset.
Okay. So do you have a date set for when this is going to become available or when your company's going to launch? Or
no dates. We're kind of more taking it in roadmap, give you kind of high level where we want to go and not promise anybody any dates because dates can become arbitrary benchmarks. But you know, in the very near future, we're focused on brand awareness, building the idea, and getting people comfortable with what we're doing. There's lots of good questions that come out of kind of pushing back, why are you doing this, et cetera, right? Especially in this space. So I'd rather get out there and let everybody kind of fire away and understand this is credible and, you know, we're going to do this and there's going to be value and, you know, let it sink into where you start thinking, maybe I want a loan, right? Maybe I could use this platform. Then we want to launch access to the beta, if you will, which is the base level of membership. You can come sign up now, get on the wait list for a loan. We need to queue that up. We're not going to be able to handle everybody, so you need to get in first, right? So if you're interested in taking a loan out, which we already have a large list of people that want to take a loan out, the way to do that would be participate in buying some membership. Lock in a spot. We give you a profile. We get it all secure. Now you understand us. We know that you're ready. Put your name on the queue and let us work towards getting you that loan you want. once we get through that phase, then it's very much business development, focusing on a campaign to really kind of go over to the lenders, right? We don't want to try to do everything all at once. We want to really go after the value proposition of the borrower first, build the community, build the access, get people on the list so they understand, yes, this is in fact going to happen. I am going to be able to get a loan based off my Ethereum or Bitcoin or at that point, whatever else we have that we're ready for. Then go to the lenders, right, and say, look, here's an entire class ready to go. You're ready for your income, your fixed asset investment. How do you want to do this? Let's structure it. And we'll be able to really focus in on that roadmap, which gets us probably near the end of this year without making any promises of dates, and when we can really kind of just allow it to get put into the wild where it starts interacting with people and financial transactions are done. And from there, we want to start figuring, what's the next market? Are we going to Ireland? Are we going to Hong Kong? Where's the best new currency to kind of pair, right?
Okay, you guys heard it here first, launching December 2017 across the universe. Okay.
Every jurisdiction, every cryptocurrency.
So then let's talk just one kind of final question then about the token sale. I imagine you're going to, you sort of said that you're going to sell the tokens for a lot cheaper than what they're going to ultimately be worth. Is the sale going to be something that is a one-time thing, or will you always be issuing tokens to anybody who wants to get a new membership? Let's say 5 years from now, somebody just is discovering this and wants to become a member. Are they going to have to go to that marketplace now, or will they still be able to buy directly from you a membership token?
Yeah, great questions. And so we're being very particular not to fall into a crowd just because we're doing stuff with blockchain of ICOs. Not that there's anything wrong with that for people out there that are in love with ICOs. It's just simply, it's not an accurate statement when you look at the words very closely. It's not initial, and I'll explain that. It's not a coin, I'll explain that, and it's not an offering, right? So, however, I totally get the fact that anytime anybody's doing anything in blockchain now, it kind of, the first word that comes out is, oh, is it an ICO, right? So, bearing that in mind, I'll kind of walk you through the way we've structured it. And I'll give you as much details as I can. There's some stuff that we don't want to release yet.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's kind of like the date. We don't want to make promises yet until we can. So, we have a fixed amount. We think having a fixed amount of units is better for accounting. Even if it doesn't matter, people still psychologically don't like to think about something that's just unlimited. It doesn't go well with holding value, right? There's a huge part of Bitcoin specifically that came to fruition because people saw the limited scope of saying there will only be this many. And you can apply that to a lot of different aspects, right? There's always something valuable and something that's scarce. However, that's not our primary driver, but we did decide to make it a capped amount of membership units that we would then use as either an instant purchase or a credit. The next piece is, don't want to talk about pricing yet, although we know in order to attract the type of user base we need to really give us the data and build the base that we want, it's got to be very attractive. It's got to be, you know, I don't want to say free, because when you give something away for free, it doesn't really have the value it should. And we don't want people to think this is something that's cheap. It's very expensive to build and to service this type of product, because you're interfacing directly with the financial institutions of the world. So it will be of a discount, though, as much of a discount as we can give away without too much liability. So there is a benefit right then and there if you think this idea is something you'd use for being an early adopter, right? We want to give the benefit to you, knowing that we want to interact with you, we want your feedback, we want to get you on board and not be pissed that you spent too much money, right? So it'll be very small. The next thing is, because it's a consumptive use of a token, it's not an asset. It doesn't give you ownership in the company. There's no promise associated with it other than you can consume it for our products. Because of that nature, ultimately we had to make a decision on whether or not it would be transferable into a burn address where it's gone forever and then doesn't exist anymore, or if we'd keep reissuing them. Or if we'll just transact where it just moves ownership. So you spend your first one with us for membership, and it goes back into our accounting. Now you have a membership that you're going to use, and now we're going to resell that same unit to somebody else who also wants to be in it. So it's another way of being able to have this business model perpetuate for the next, however, hopefully 50 years plus whatever it is into the future. And there's a lot we could talk about there. I know we'll probably run out of time, because you're getting into the nuts and bolts of it, right? But that's kind of some of the basics of how we're structuring how we're structuring it.
You guys are going to be in, you're going to be at Consensus. Some people might have already seen you at Consensus. At this point, I imagine you're still just getting the word out. And it sounds to me like you're not trying to use this token sale as some type of fundraising opportunity. So I guess if all of that is the case, then, you know, what's paying the bills now? Are you VC backed or whatever else? What's the goal of your trip to Consensus? Like, what do you hope to get out of it? Just kind of let's start to tie up some loose ends here of some various things.
Yeah, those are great questions. So let me just run through them real quick. We self-funded. We put our own money at stake. We went to our friends and family, and we raised this with people we know. Nothing against VCs, because we may will probably be working with you. But we ended up wanting to take this approach rather than go down the road of taking a deck out to Silicon Valley and pitching it to everybody. We wanted to prove that we were going to build the technology, period, whether or not you give us money or not. So we self-funded. We will most likely do a subsequent round, which would either be kind of an extended seed round or just a Series A. And we'll also be doing some debt offerings for people that want to help us grow. And although it's not our primary objective, because really the marketing and market penetration is our primary objective of how we've structured our kind of launch, it is a revenue event that does have a lot of the same elements ultimately of what people are thinking of in an ICO world, right? So we want people to help us build this. We want people to say, this is a freaking cool idea. I could scratch my itch with that. This is something I want to use. I could use a loan. I get this, right? Which is guys like me. I totally want to use this. This is part of the value. We want those people to help us, right? So whether or not that's the opportunity because we're talking to you at Consensus or already did or in the future about raising money and you want to take a look at what it would look like to be involved with the company, there's a lot of different ways you could play and add value. Whether or not you're just a borrower, you're just a lender, you want to invest in the company, you want to help us crowd raise, you want to be an affiliate, you want to help us be kind of in the community. There's a lot of different ways. So we want to attract as many people as possible, and we'll continue to fund, self-fund it if we have to, although we're getting to the point where we'll want to probably look at a larger amount of money, amount of growth, and ultimately get to where we're revenue positive as soon as possible. And we think we'll be there pretty quick.
Even without this, without selling our memberships before the launch, we're on course to launch. We're going to launch either way. So even if some ruling comes down from the powers that be, we're still going to be launching a product without doing our membership sale. But I think what the membership sale can do is it puts us in a position where if we do take on more funding from, a VC, say, it's for strategic benefit, not just because we need the money, right? It puts us in a much better position.
One other fact I think that I personally would like if I were listening to this, because we're big believers in blockchain and been around since the beginning of Bitcoin, we are not of the opinion that we should take in participants that send us cryptocurrencies or payments and then convert them and sell them out so we can live off of that. Rather, we want to prove our own business model. So any type of assets we acquire, say you want to pay for your first membership in Bitcoin, we're going to hold on to that and we're going to take a loan out against it. So we're big believers that the meal that we're serving up, we're going to be eating. Don't trust a cook who doesn't eat his own cooking. And we're going to prove this model in the fact that there's a big value add, I think, in the community when you realize that the company is following the exact same model that it's selling. And if that means us bringing in $20 million in Bitcoin and holding onto it, to me, that sounds awesome. So I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, we're going to practice what we preach for sure. We're not going to take all your Ethereum and Bitcoin and then convert it into U.S. dollars into a bank account somewhere sitting there off the market.
I'll trust you've done your homework on that one. So, okay, so then Consensus, then you're looking to raise awareness and make sure people know about your company. Do you have a talk or any type of official thing?
No, officially we have a booth. We've got a spot carved out. We're really there to talk to people one-on-one. Our goal out of Consensus specifically is for us to go meet as many people as possible, change from where we were purposefully being stealth and keeping ourselves off the radar to saying, hey, here we are, let's talk. And we are already a big part of the community. Everybody involved has been in this community for a long time. We just want to expand that and meet a ton more people.
Yeah, this is our cotillion, our introduction to society, as it were. You know, we're here.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you said you've been part of the community for a while. I know you had something to do with Southern Hospitality here in Denver. Is that right?
That's right.
And they're one of the, for people who are listening, they're one of the restaurants in Denver that accept Bitcoin. But how else have you kind of been involved or been around? Where might people know you from?
I can actually speak to this for a second. This is how I met Sean. Sean was formerly the CEO of a restaurant group called Southern Hospitality and
Southern Concepts. Yeah.
Southern Concepts, excuse me. And as a part of that restaurant group and in the operations there, he spearheaded Southern Hospitality being, as far as we know, the first brick and mortar business in Colorado to accept Bitcoin for all their goods and services.
That's right.
They integrated into their point of sale, trained all of their staff. It was something that was a bold move, and he put his own name on the line to prove the model. And I think that I think for myself, he proved that he cared about the community and cared about Bitcoin as a whole and cryptocurrency as a whole. And not in a theoretical way, but in a very practical, putting himself on the line for it. And I thought I had tons of respect for that. And so when we started this project, it was really through that connection that we had that's how we met. And it was
we might have met that way somewhere along the way.
Yeah. So Sean's been into Bitcoin a lot longer than I have, and into cryptocurrency longer than I have, and has been a very respectable advocate for both. And I think that's something that he probably wouldn't say appropriately enough. So I'll say it for him. Like, I've never met somebody who cares more about this space and what it can do for humanity in the future of money and value. So that's a little background about how I met Sean.
Yeah, I think the really quick version. Thank you, Caleb.
Yeah.
Because I probably wouldn't have said that as well. So the real quick version, I heard about Bitcoin in 2011, was fascinated by it from the economical standpoint. Was very much into sound money and the idea of kind of free money, if you will, and that just became an obsession. So in 2012, when I kind of had the opportunity to see if we could take it as payment in a restaurant, there wasn't really many people doing that. There wasn't any Ethereum. There was no anything else. It was just Bitcoin, right? There was no blockchain. It was just Bitcoin, and it was very successful. I met tons of people that were very supportive and came and spent money and for beer and barbecue and. You know, that helped me meet a lot of people and pursue ideas, which is where Caleb and I met, first started writing ideas down on whiteboards. But I've just been involved in a lot of different ways. Any way I possibly can, I've used every service. I'm out there always kind of looking to support anybody that's in the community. And I think that this has been the best idea we've come up with yet out of all the ones that could have happened. And I truly believe that this will be of great value to not only finance, but really to the space, you know, the Bitcoin and blockchain space as it is today and into the future.
Yeah, I think it's certainly a cool idea, and hopefully this podcast will start to help make people aware of it. This has been fun, guys.
Oh, thank you so much for coming down to talk with us. And anybody that's listening, please, if you have any further questions, don't hesitate to reach out. We're online at saltlending.com. We're on Facebook at saltlending. We're on Twitter at saltlending as well. And very soon we're going to be launching our public Slack channel. So we would love to talk to you in any medium that you would like to talk to us. And we would love to be available to answer any questions. We're a hungry young company, and we are interested in speaking to you no matter what your questions or concerns are. We want to build the relationship now. And there's no lock on the door as far as speaking to us or getting access to us. From a company-wide perspective, we're an open book, and we really want to talk to you. So reach out. Don't be a stranger.
Very cool. Yeah, I think I saw you guys even have a subreddit. I don't know if it's totally ready yet or not, but it looked like our salt lending was at least being set up for you.
Yeah, it's there. We need to go in there and get some conversation going. But there's a lot of channels, and like Caleb said, any way we can possibly talk, we will. I'm looking forward to listening to your podcast. I haven't heard it yet, so this will give me a good reason to come check everybody out there as well.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. For people who are listening, what you fail to appreciate is that we're sitting in a room overlooking downtown Denver watching the beautiful May snowstorm that's coming down.
Good old classic Colorado May snowstorms.
Yeah, so, thank you for having me. Anybody who's listening, you can find out more about this podcast on MoneroMonitor.com. You can follow me on Twitter at MoneroMonitor. Or if you're on Reddit, look for Big Red Machine. That's me. And yeah, thank you for listening in.
Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks for listening to today's show. If you enjoyed what you heard, please consider donating on our website, MoneroMonitor.com. The Monero Monitor podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons share-alike license. Specific terms of this license can be found on our website. Music featured in the show is by Justin Maher and used under a Creative Commons license.